Blog Talk Radio.
Look out, evildoers! There's a new crime fighter in town! Here comes the Blue Roofie!
Unhunter, criminal scum! Prepare to be brought to justice! But first,
can I buy you a drink?
Welcome to the Blue Roofie podcast.
Well, you know, I think the episode last week with Corporal Chloroform kidnapped his girlfriend, I thought that was really touching.
Well, I mean,
talk about downer endings.
Iris out. I got hard Iris out.
Okay. We're going to be talking about the JR funeral episode of Dallas as soon as our Hispanic correspondent Miguel Garza shows up. This has been a really big week in a lot of ways. Personally, not good, but and also just in entertainment news. Now, Neil, you heard about the Veronica Mars Kickstarter, right?
Well, from you.
Well, you know, it ran its goal of $2 million in 12 hours. And, you know, there was another Kickstarter that didn't make its money. It was the Uncle Ruckus Kickstarter for the Uncle Ruckus movie. And, you know, I feel like there's a form of discrimination going on here because, you know, when you have a for some reason, when an old white man needs help to get his movie made, there's nothing. But if a pretty white girl needs it, oh, sure, that's great.
That's all because he had to reach for the LIGO.
Yeah, I know. And, you know, the thing is, you know, we were having this discussion also. You know, Veronica Mars is a great show. It really is. It deserves this. But I felt like the, hold on a second. Hello?
Yeah, hit the button here.
Is this Miguel?
Yes, this is.
Okay, so, you know, we were talking about, don't you think it's a form of discrimination that an old white man can't get his movie made? Like Uncle Ruckus?
It's gotta be.
Yeah, I mean, just because he has vitiligo, he's not being treated fairly. Now, you know, I was telling Neil the other day that, you know, Veronica Mars really is a great show, and it's like, I used to like Kristen Bell. It's one of those things that, you know, ever since she married Dax Shepard, I have felt no attraction for her, which I'm sure will kill her to know. Because it's one of those things,
yeah.
It's kind of like, it's like Katy Perry and Russell Brand. It's like, you know,
the hot chick with the douchebag syndrome.
It's just one of those things you don't want to enter you don't want to enter that place. It's like you're going to have to put a blindfold on your dick and tell them you're taking them to a surprise party.
Yeah, dude, there's definitely been some territory that's been pissed on there.
Which is funny because in real life it's probably the case, but you don't have it as plastered in. You don't have it as embedded on your brain. So, you know, you get done, your dick's going to be like, where'd you take me? Where am I?
It's like, no.
You know, and it's crying tears, really thick tears. You know, because this is a classy show.
Yeah, it's for the family.
Okay, so now Dallas, over a week ago, which we didn't get a chance to because of various elements in both real life coming together, they killed off JR finally.
Rest in peace.
And they did the funeral episode. And the funeral episode, as we were talking about this online, the funeral episode was really strong. It's like the strongest episode they've done.
Yeah, it's like I was saying, it's the first time that this new Dallas felt like old Dallas.
Yeah, it really did. And the thing I'm worried about is that they were forced by circumstances to make it a good episode. And once they get out of that airport, right, they're going to start doing all their bullshit about Christopher trying to make a methane-powered rocket ship to Mars. So, to be fair, if you watch some of the later seasons of Dallas, you get the feeling if the show had went on just a little longer, JR would be dealing with Martians.
Yeah,
it was a JR science show.
Yeah, it's like, you know, he does big screw over and the Martians are doing the clicking language. just like, we gave you the mineral rights to Exosor City.
You see JR somehow having sex with an alien woman.
Well, Dala, I just don't know where the thing put it. I'm a man.
You know, Dallas turns into Star Trek so easily.
Well, you know, honestly, at this point, if it turned out that all of Dallas was some bizarre wish made by Major Nelson, it would all make sense.
Or the artistic memories of a kid looking in a looking into a snow globe.
Bill didn't pick up on the Ezra Magini reference. He doesn't know the name. He doesn't know the name Tony Nelson by heart.
No, I just went for St. Elsewhere.
Either way.
Okay.
Wasn't St. Elsewhere? Didn't they do a cameo? I don't remember how many people got tied in with St. Elsewhere.
Cheers did a cameo on St. Elsewhere.
I'm pretty sure basically they're tied in somehow in the St. Elsewhere Dallas is.
Somewhere, which like I said, you know, I would really want to turn Dallas into a sci-fi fantasy show because if you could add science and bullshit magic into the show, you could explain a lot of inconsistencies.
You know, I miss those days when every single TV show that was on during prime time on each network took place in the same galaxy, like the same universe. They were all connected.
Like Step by Step and Family Matters?
Yeah, you'd see Urkel would pop up here and there. You know, they need to bring that back. I know they kind of do that crap on Nickelodeon.
Yeah, you know, the thing I liked about that Urkel episode is that he flew in a rocket jetpack from Chicago at the end of Family Matters on Step by Step.
The episode right after.
And if you'll remember, there's a clip on YouTube of him doing the Urkel dance on Step by Step. And again, Jalal White's doing a great job at it, but you can look in his eyes. You can tell his heart is not into this job anymore. They're just paying him too much fucking money to quit. Yeah, I don't even know if he needs money.
One day too long.
Well, it's one of those things. They're just paying him too much fucking money to quit.
Actually, I was trying to figure, did you ever hear about the whole Sonic fan film that they did a couple months back?
No.
Yeah, you told me about it.
Well, they got Jaleel White to do the voice of Sonic for the little video. I wonder how much they spent for him, because either he can't really do the voice, or he's just kind of, you know, just try to keep up. Like, he's just kind of like, yeah, let me get the two lines in.
I'm not sure.
I don't know, I think he's kind of gotten to that Charlene Tilton level where he'd show up for a piece of cheese on a Ritz cracker.
My theory is he probably has so much money now from playing Urkel. Because you never hear about him being on drugs or anything. And for those things, he doesn't have
I wonder if he really made that big money, though, because the Urkel merchandise didn't start coming out until the show was about to peter out.
Like Urkelos? Terrible, terrible cereal.
Yeah.
Well, I'm guessing that if you're like a 22-year-old man and you're having to wear that Urkel outfit, that there's got to be something keeping you there.
Yeah, you know, the first time you went out to a club and there were, like, all the other successful child actors were there, and he kind of thought he belonged, and then they just pointed and laughed at him and made him do the Urkel dance. So that just kind of put a damper on celebrity status.
He went as Stefan Urkel when he went out.
And they saw right through that ruse.
I like how Stefan Urkel was actually really fucking evil.
Well, like, he kind of was evil the first time, then he kind of scaled back, then his persona became his own, and he became like an evil Batman.
No, they said it was like the formula brought out the bad traits, then later it was revealed when he got the chamber that he couldn't ingest it directly because it gave him a rash on his dick.
No, like I'm saying, at some point he became his own person, and he interacted with the others with Urkel and the female Urkel.
Hey, do you remember the episode where the guy left the racist note in Laura's locker?
No, on her locker.
Yeah, he left it on her locker.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, if this was 2 seasons later, Urkel would have created a serum and turned that guy into red paste.
See, that's the thing, man. Urkel, he could have only existed in a pre-Columbine America.
Well, he did make that nuclear bomb.
Exactly.
No, that was only a dream sequence. It didn't actually happen.
Well, it was based on something he couldn't do.
Welcome to the Def and JR podcast where we talk about Urkel.
Well, Urkel's awesome. Well, we don't need to say when Urkel's killed. So, going back to that episode, especially from this week, Sue Ellen is so desperate to get rid of fucking Gary that she calls Val. And Val's all like, you better stay away from him.
That scene with Val and Lucy, where Lucy looks like she's about 30 years older than Val, that was just, that captured Charlene Till. I'm fascinated with her. She's my new Ellie Neidhart.
Well, you know, it was funny, though, because Val gets in there, and she's all like, you just want to get your claws into Gary, and it's like, nobody wants fucking Gary!
Do you understand? He is the booby prize of a family. Nobody wants him. He's Fredo.
Yeah, nobody. And the thing is, we were talking about this. Jaylen doesn't really hate Gary. He's kind of disgusted with Gary.
Yeah.
It's like, how the fuck am I related to you? Like, he respects Ray. You know, he feels threatened by Ray. That's why he's always been so aggressive toward him.
Yeah.
But Gary, it's like he's just a fuck-up. It's like he fucked up in college. And JR said this in an early, you know, like one of the early seasons, how he said he didn't hate Gary, that he really wanted him to become, you know, he said he had plans for him, you know, so he really thought that he was going to make something of himself.
Gary, the eternal fuck-up.
Now, is it possible that alcohol killed the Ewing parts of Gary's brain?
I doubt they were even there. I'm telling you right now, Miss Ellie had to have had an affair.
Well, see, I would think that, but aside, he looks just enough like Jock.
Yeah, I guess, but in my mind, he will always be the bastard son of, like, some ranch hand.
Maybe Miss Ellie drank a lot.
Oh, I got it. She drank while she was pregnant. There you go.
Yeah,
it runs in the family.
Or Digger Barnes, in one of his drunken rampages, knocked Miss Ellie down the stairs or something, and she never told Jock.
Ew, Miss Ellie, the only woman on earth who can get away with calling him Willard.
I like this meeting in this week's episode. Cliff's talking about Digger, and again, you have to understand that, you know, they retconned this very early, but if you go back to those early seasons, Cliff didn't like Digger.
You know, the original Digger was the best. I felt so bad when they switched Diggers, because that second guy did not look like the kind of guy who would hold a 30-year grudge.
No, he did. He just looked like some old-time, he looked like an old-time, what do they call him? Prospector.
Yeah, like a prospector or a hobo.
But the first one, you know, not only did he look like Cliff, but he also, he looked like an old school drunk.
God, that guy episode where he was detoxing. Tam goes to see him. This is the best part. It was like, he was so out of it. I was like, oh, God, this guy's the best.
You know, and the thing is, I've grown up around guys like him, you know, where he's such a hate, because you can just tell he's a hateful fucking drunk. That's a chore to be
right
around. You can also tell that he's charming enough when he's sober that you say, well, maybe he won't do it again.
You know what? I'm going to give him another chance.
Yeah, it's like, you know, because I tell you, I grew up around drunks, and that's the exact time. The second Digger was like a wino. You're like, fuck him, get him away from me, don't care if the old fuck dies.
Well, it was like, the best part with the original Digger was the barbecue episode, where it's like, he's making a legitimate effort, and then Jock just dresses him down in front of everybody, and he's just like, oh, fuck it, I tried that, didn't work, back to drinking.
That's what got me to start watching the show, that video, that clip you posted.
You know what he's doing, dancing in the Yellow Rose of Texas?
And, yo, and the thing is, I get why Jock hates him so bad, because you can tell that Jock, that Digger probably made his life difficult for years and years.
Digger was Jock's Gary without the relationship. It was more like a friendship.
You know, and he felt loyal to him, because Digger did help him get his, did help him start the company. And, you know, another thing, you could just, and Digger does look like the type of guy that would let you do all the work. Then when you finally get the money, saying, where's my share?
Yep. Yeah, it was like that one episode. Like, I think it's the first time they show Digger. He's drinking in a bar, and he's talking about how he Jock screwed him out of all of his money. And I had him at a gunpoint one day, and I just couldn't pull the trigger. I drill, but I don't kill.
Again, he seems like he'd be awesome. He's like the type of guy that'd be awesome to hang around, but you would not want to be related to him or live with him.
Yeah, and it's like I can see the original Digger being so proud of everything Cliff's done now, but I think the second Digger would be disappointed because the second Digger was a pussy who had the deathbed repentance for his crimes.
And he wanted to go around, you know, and he was like, you know, the first one, you know, what was it? No, it's just I, you know, he pulled, damn it, I lost my fucking train of thought. Oh, yeah, the second Digger, you know. I always liked how Pam acted like she was so brokenhearted that Hutch McCullough didn't get to raise her. It's like, Pam, in case you didn't notice, Hutch McCullough's just a different brand of Digger.
Yeah, no, he's like the Korean knockoff of Digger.
Yeah, you weren't going to have a better life, you know. You would have had it'd been a lateral movement.
Yeah, it's a parallel step, nothing more.
Oh, did you notice that Catherine was mentioned as being dead on this week's episode?
Yeah, I was like, oh, huh, the old bitch finally kicked in, huh?
I like to prefer that they think that she died in the dream season and they haven't done their research well enough.
It's some intern just going through and watching the season and hasn't gotten that far yet.
Well, if you'll remember the original show, remember JR's detective that was killed by that narrow woman?
Yeah, yeah.
He stayed dead when he came back.
JR
mentioned he'd been murdered. Okay, we've got
have
Neil back. Keep going.
Welcome back, Neil. I have to say, out of all the detectives that the Ewings have had over the years, Bum is my favorite.
Yeah, he's really dedicated.
Yeah, it's like he feels like he's got some skin in the game, like he's almost thinks of himself as an honorary Ewing.
What's the name? I can't remember McSween. I always liked him because I always felt like McSween was coming from his own television show.
Like, it kind of like reminded me like in sleaziness. He's kind of like from the Rockford, like James Rockford from the Rockford Files without the good looks.
God, do you remember that guy that replaced McSween from the police department in the later seasons? He had these awful sideburns. Or eyebrows or something. It distracted the shit out of me.
Yeah, there's something about Dallas and the effect it has on men as they get older and their eyebrows turn into wings.
Well, I always like the fact that Larry Hagman played it up.
Yeah, but I mean, it's like towards the end there, it looked like his eyes were trying to fly away from his face.
Well, it was like eventually they were going to come to life and start strangling Cliff.
So what do you make of the ceasefire between Christopher and John Ross?
It makes me not want to punch the screen more often because Christopher's not having to be such an entitled little shit.
Yeah,
so
it's like,
I'm finding
they have like this strange common ground where it's almost like when Ray and JR would go out and get laid. It kind of almost has that vibe, but not quite.
You know what I like about it is, and Christopher's still such an annoying little shit now, he's like, my Uncle JR, you little fucker, you wanted to put him in prison.
That man was more of a father to you than your own father.
I
like what the Dover's boy did. He's like, dear rich JR Ewing, how I loved him! And his money.
Elena found out what he did, and it's like, you know, Christopher's all like, what did I do? It's like, you whored out your cousin! which actually, that's a good sign he's a Barnes.
So, do you think they're actually going to track down Pam?
I think so, and the one thing I kept thinking was, and I mentioned this, that she is going to be so disappointed.
You know, it would be hilarious if they get the woman who played Pam after she had her quote-unquote face reconstruction if it's towards the very end of the show instead of Victoria Principal.
Well, to be fair, Victoria Principal does look like a woman that survived being burned alive. And I hate to say it, I mean, I know that's me.
Put Victoria Principal next to Sue Ellen, next to Val, and it's just like the Hall of Horrors.
Yeah. Well, it's unless it's in plastic surgery, you know, because I was thinking, you know, Val looks like, you know, what's that woman's name? It reminds me of that joke they did on Family Guy, where they had a picture of her, they showed her in, like, the 80s, and Meg's all like, oh, she's beautiful. Well, here she is after dating Glenn Quagmire. I can't remember that woman's name. Now, here's what, we need to find somebody that watched Knots Landing to find out if Gary is much of a useless piece of shit on that show.
You know, it's, I talk, my granny is like the foremost Dallas expert in my family, believe it or not. And the first thing she said, because like, I get every Tuesday morning I get an email from her about Dallas. The first thing it says was, I don't remember Gary being that damn homely.
You know, he used to have something that would have been rugged good looks, and if he had any type of spine today, and I don't know if, what's the name of that man that plays him? I can't remember his name. I can't remember shit. Is that Ted Shackelford? Okay, I thought that was the first one for a second. But, you know, it's one of those,
the
I don't know if he's that good an actor.
Steve Aykroyd.
Yeah, that one actually looked like Gary Axe.
You know, and it's funny because, like, I looked that guy up on IMDb, and it was like, oh, the only other thing he was known for was playing John Wayne Gacy or something like that.
Well, I know John Wayne Gacy is played by the fat guy from Teen Wolf.
Oh, Francis from Pee-wee's Big Adventure?
Yeah, me and Dylan had this argument because I say he's best known as Chubbs from Teen Wolf, and he says Pee-wee's Big Adventure, then I threaten to punch him in the throat, then he backs down, but I know he's still thinking it.
Well, I guess I'm Team Neil, then.
These are the only times we get into arguments. We get into arguments about the stupidest shit.
Well, you know, I'm pretty sure the box office would back me and Neil up on this.
And I say people, most people can't tell the difference between Pee-wee's Big Adventure and Big Top Pee-wee. No, I don't like how Pee-wee became a pussy hound in the second movie.
Big Top Pee-wee
like,
has
you know,
entirely different
big
feel from the first movie. They're going to only saw it like once.
Yeah.
What were you saying, Alma?
Big Top Pee Wee sucked. And that's all.
Oh,
it was
yeah.
Plain and simple. It was bad.
Yeah. Well, you know, no, I'm not disagreeing because Pee Wee's Big Adventure is better. I'm just saying it's not a timeless classic like Teen Wolf with the werewolf playing basketball.
Oh, disagree. I disagree. There is absolutely no movie from that era that holds up better than Pee-wee's Big Adventure. You watch Teen Wolf now, the practical effects are horrible.
No, it's
well,
not about
no,
the practical effects. It's just that...
But the money they had,
play,
they did pretty good.
In Teen Wolf, you know it's the 80s. You can tell it's the 80s. Pee-wee's Big Adventure,
there's
it could be any
Styles,
time
for God's sake.
Like, Pee-wee's
Big
Adventure is
evergreen.
Well,
yeah,
you know, the thing
exactly.
With Teen Wolf is... I'll watch Teen Wolf anytime as long as it's at the basketball scene. At the end,
the basketball
scene. You know,
him riding on the band.
Or Neil was watching it one time and the werewolf was walking down the hall and the principal gets onto him and Neil, what did you say he would say to the principal?
I was like, hey, I'm running in the hall. Fuck you, I'm a werewolf.
Okay, so, anyway, did you know, now I remember what I was going to say, do you remember on the funeral episode, did you get the sense that JR's ghost was making commentary to an angel, and we just didn't see that part?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I could just see him just sitting there shaking his head after every single person got up and did their pathetic mewling.
Except for Bobby, he actually respects Bobby. And
well,
Bobby's
yeah,
going off on... When Bobby went off on Anne,
that
it felt like
awful.
That he was an audience surrogate.
Okay, we've listened to the feedback, and the audience kind of hates you, so we're going to take it out on you right here in this scene, okay?
It's like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Leaving your child in a family?
you understand? I'm Bobby fucking Ewing.
And then Bob, and then I like to think Bobby went down the hall and found Christopher.
You're
let me explain this. Yes, with people with questionable family, I know when someone is ashamed of a family member and they don't want to say it because they want to be loyal, and Bobby has no respect for Christopher.
No, none.
You know, he respects John Ross, but he can't turn against his... But Bobby's a very loyal man.
Yeah, you know what's funny? These kids on this show are so horrible. Like, it took Emma all of 2 episodes to complete her Lucy transformation.
Yeah, I like my favorite part of the funeral episode is with the non-Germans. John Ross walks in the room, sees her popping a pill, he looks, sees what it is, takes one, and leaves.
Like, that's just totally normal behavior.
And now John Ross at the moment is fucking his cousin's ex-wife, his uncle's stepdaughter, some random cougar from the oil department or the power department, or wait, was it the garbage department?
Yeah, she's the sanitation department.
I mean, John Ross's dick must be calloused at this point.
I was just thinking about that. I was like, holy shit, that's 3 in 1 episode. What is this man taking?
Yeah, even JR couldn't handle that. Well, you know, he's on his... Obviously, John Ross has serious issues with his mother, and he's working it out through various sexual conquests.
And now he owns half a South Fork.
Yeah, Miss Ellie left that letter, and I'm thinking, I think Miss Ellie felt so bad for John Ross, she wanted to gamble on him.
You know, I still think the letter is bullshit. I think JR just, like, typed it up on, like, some old ass, went and found an old-timey typewriter and forged his mama's signature. And, you know, he was not beyond that.
Yeah, it's just the way it was done, that letter, you know. And I get the feeling, because it seems like one of those things that if JR had been alive and knew about that letter, he'd be livid. Of course, I still think JR is alive. I think that, you know, I think the goblet serum kicked in.
Yeah, I'll say this. The way they drug out Jock's death when they knew Jim Davis was going to die. So they did the plane crash, and then they drug it out for, like, what, 4 episodes before they finally pronounced him dead. We got instant closure, and I'm at least happy for that.
Yeah, well, you know, it's like when Jim Davis, his last appearance on screen, he looked so sick.
Yeah, and he was obviously wearing a wig. I mean, it was bad. He was so skinny.
Yeah, you don't want to see him like that.
Oh, and it's like even in the last, like, 4 or 5 episodes that Larry Hagman was in almost every single scene he was sitting down.
Yeah, you knew it wasn't going to be long. I hope they don't try to do another season. I don't even... And the thing they did with Cliff at the end of this episode, if I wasn't so disconnected to this show by this point, I would be, you know, because Cliff's not going to, you know, he's not going to blow up his daughter. Especially a daughter that has Ewing's grandkids.
You would think he wouldn't.
Of course, now here's my theory, and Eric helped me develop it. I believe that when Jeremy Wendell was in prison, he had his brain put in Cliff's body.
It's like all of me.
Yeah, you know, remember when Dr. Doom died in the 80s and he switched bodies with this guy that was nearby using the Ovoid technique?
Right.
Now, is this becoming like the Simpsons stories for years? Cliff becomes a robot.
That would be pretty sweet, actually, Cyborg Cliff, but that's the only way I would explain
Robo
it.
Robo Cliff and Robo JR.
Well, it's like I said, Cyber Drago versus Zombie Apollo.
Wedding after wedding after wedding. And did someone say long-lost triplets?
Okay, well, at the beginning of the episode, Ryland's actually my favorite character left on the show.
Yeah, he's pretty cool.
Like when he told his mother, you know, and I don't know what the hell's going on with that. It makes me uncomfortable and aroused at the same time.
I totally expected them to start making out.
I did too! I would have to say it because it was too obvious for me, but that's what I was expecting. But anyway, he's like, you know, what did you say? I'll tell you what I saw in her. She wasn't you.
It's funny because, like, that guy Mitch Pileggi is such a good actor. It's like my first exposure to him was The X-Files, so I always kind of in the back of my mind, I'm like, wow, I can't believe the guy that used to run the FBI turned out to be such a dick.
Do you want now, Neil?
It fits.
Okay, there was this one point down in the episode, Ryla's meeting with Cliff, and Cliff was like, my daddy, Digger Barnes. Again, sounding like old Cliff, and Ryla was like, Digger Barnes? He's the dick through my garbage.
The same Digger Barnes that digs through my garbage?
Besides, you know, Digger's known by everybody in Dallas. And that's what's funny. He doesn't have the money or wealth, but by God, everybody knew who he was.
Rest in peace, Digger.
JR's getting to the afterlife, you know, and he's thinking he's in heaven, you know, because he's got all types of tail and liquor, and he gets in his room, and it's like, howdy, bunk maidens, Digger.
Digger and Jeremy Wendell.
Yeah, is Wendell dead? I mean, I would think so, because he was ancient in 91.
Yeah,
well,
he has to be.
Yeah, because it was like he was fucking ancient in 91.
Oh, here's one thing I don't know about the show. Do we know how old Emma is? Because in my mind, she's like 17 or 18, and she's just banging all these dudes.
I think she might. I think they said she was 19.
Okay.
No, it's enough that John Ross won't be running into a felony. So you know he's banging teenagers.
Let's just hopefully not find out that he's also her uncle somehow, because I don't know if I could go through that a second time with this show.
Yeah, but man, I always felt like he added a pathos to Ray. Like he was desperately trying to forget that happened, because, you know, it's like he just thought he was banging an underage girl. He didn't think he was banging his niece.
Are you envisioning Ray just in a sleazy car just slowly driving by a high school?
Well, no, I think Ray was going through a very bad period in his life. Like, if you go by the ideal, there was a Dallas season zero, and that Pam left him high and dry. And really, because, you know, Ray does do very stupid shit after a woman fucks him over.
Yes, he does.
So, you know, I'm guessing that Lucy was throwing herself at anything to move, trying to get over her own father issues. And Ray
who
was super drunk one night.
Who's the two guys that Jock went in for with Ray with for Tecapo? It was Punk and what's the other guy's name? It was Punk Anderson, and I can't remember the other guy's name. I'd like to think somehow they're both still alive.
Yeah, they're just talking. Well, it's what I was thinking. You know, if Wes Parmalee really was Jock, then I'm thinking he's still alive somehow. Oh, yeah, I wanted to mention this, that, you know, YouTube now that they don't have the time limits, has a bunch of wrestling shows up. And they have the first two Slammy broadcasts.
Oh, man.
And if you've seen the 87 Slammies, that is like that's the most entertaining wrestling show without wrestling I've ever seen. Like Honky Tonk Man's doing a big musical number.
Yeah, I was going to say, it had to have been heavy with the Honky Tonk Man if it's 87.
Right, he's doing his big musical number, and all of a sudden, the Hart Foundation come on stage and start breakdancing. And then later, Harley Race and Hacksaw Jim Duggan have this big brawl throughout the building, and it's like, now for the award for best music video, and they have the big monitor up, Harley Race gets thrown through it.
Harley Race's WWF run was so weird, because it was like, you knew he was so broken down and so old, but you're like, God damn it, he's still Harley Race. No matter how they put a crown on him, and it just didn't work. But it was like, at the end of the day, you're like, no, damn it, this is still Harley Race.
Yeah, that was one of the high points. Also, those two brawls he had with Hogan.
Yeah. Well, it's like, the first one they brought him in, they called him Handsome Harley Race. And you're looking at him, you're like, no, dude, this is Harley Race. He's ugly as sin. Just call him Harley Race. And then he became King Harley Race.
Yeah, he won a tournament. He actually won one of the first King of the Ring tournaments to get that.
Yeah, he earned it. I'd give him that. But I mean, it's like, it just didn't fit. He wasn't like the regal type. And the best part was he was like on cloud nine because he thought this was Vince's way of crowning him as the king of all wrestlers.
Yeah, which, you know, that led to Jerry Lawler filing a lawsuit.
I bet you Lawler has spent a shitload of money suing other promoters throughout his career.
Yeah, it was one of those things, Joe. It's funny how I always wonder how he ended up in the WWF in 92 because he really fucking hated them. Then again, that was that weird period that Vince was being the benevolent promoter to all the little guys. You know, it seemed like a person, okay, you know when a person hits a really hot streak and they become big and they ignore everybody, but then they start losing money a little bit. So it's like, you know, I need to go around people poorer than me and feel like a big shot.
Or he would just do something so horrible that he would feel the need to go out and do something good to try to make up for it.
Yeah. It's like, oh, I can't sell Dele Arena. Hey, Smokey Mountain, why don't you take some of my wrestlers for the weekend? Now, do we know what's happening on Dallas next week? Because I had to watch it online. I didn't get a preview.
All I saw was like the wreckage of the explosion and Christopher sitting in the hospital, his whiniest voice going, "It hasn't been sabotaged. Everything else checked out. The only thing it could have been was sabotage." And at that point, I deleted it. I was like, "Oh God, delete."
Well, Dallas has finally reached the point ahead of Moldovan massacre.
See where Cliff's just sitting there on the phone and he's like contorting his face in this weird angle and he says, "Just do it, okay?" And then hangs up.
Yeah, I don't feel like that Ken Kirchhoff, I don't think he really believes in this.
No, I think even he knows that Cliff, there's still a little shred of the man of the people Cliff still in there that wouldn't have done that.
Yeah, it's just one of those things that, well, you know, he talked about how he thought they took advantage of him over the years. You know,
the writers definitely took liberties with Cliff.
Yeah. I always wondered, do you think Cliff remembers he's a Democrat?
I think once he struck oil, he handed in his Democrat membership ID.
It's just ideal. He's at this one political party. And I always did like this about Dallas, the way they used to be. They strove to be apolitical. Like, they would have issues, but they would try not to do anything that would alienate the audience one way or another.
Yeah, that was like when Lucy was going to marry the gay dude. That was like the first TV show to handle anything even like that.
Right, because, you know, and the thing is, they did it in such a way that if you were going to get pissed off at the show, it would be how the characters were behaving, not because they said Bobby was a Republican.
Right.
Which, it's hard to imagine Bobby Ewing being in today's Republican Party.
Yeah, I don't know what Bobby would be today. I think he would be kind of like one of the old guard Republicans.
Yeah, I think he'd still be voting Republican because Bobby Ewing's the most loyal man that ever lived. But I think in his Facebook profile, it would say he was a libertarian.
Would he know what it actually means, or would he just kind of go with it?
He just goes with a very vague definition of libertarian.
And I'm guessing John Ross would be a Tea Party member.
I don't think John Ross even thinks about voting. I don't think his mind veers very far from pussy or trying to make oil deals.
Yeah, he's politically asexual.
Yeah, Christopher, I'm not sure about. I feel like he'd be one of those hypocritical Democrats.
Yeah, he's one of those.
Why do I think bipartisan sexual? Like, he basically switches teams whenever it behooves
him.
Well,
I feel like he'd be talking about how hard it is for poor people while at the same time he's eating at these fancy fucking restaurants.
Oh.
Is the irony ever dawns on him? Do what now?
Limousine liberal.
Yeah,
yeah,
he'd be
like Lindsay
that.
From Arrested Development.
Oh, yeah, I finally did watch that show on Netflix.
He'd be like the liberal with no real reason to be liberal.
Yeah, just that, you know. But I want to, you know, and again, this will need an entire show because I'd avoided Arrested Development for years because I didn't want to give the TV critics the satisfaction.
They were right, weren't they?
Oh, yeah, they were definitely right, but I don't want to give them satisfaction.
I totally hear that.
But, you know, it's one of those things, I was watching the show, and the thing is, it's not necessarily quotable, but it's hilarious once you get all the jokes.
My favorite out of every single little inside thing that happened is the scene where Henry Winkler jumps over the shark.
I love how he was, he's like this, oh, is that one of those sleazy hotels where those silly homosexuals dress like women? And it's like, no, and it's like, oh, then I'm not interested.
He did such a good job with that character. Henry Winkler is a good sport. You know, I mean, it's like he could have easily just been pigeonholed as Fonzie, but he keeps finding these little roles that make him, you know, take him out a little further into the deep water.
Oh, that like episode of King of the Hill he was on?
Like, Super Dave Osborne's basically switching to being super aloof or just insane or very angry.
But, you know, the King of the Hill episode makes more sense now that I've seen Arrested Development, the one with Henry Winkler, because he was playing the lawyer. He was playing the lawyer on there.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
I didn't like that Scott Baio was basically playing himself on the show as being a humorless dickhead.
I'm almost scared of how the new episodes are going to be because there's no way they're going to be the same.
You know, but we do, I was saying when I was watching, you know, Michael, that's the character I identify with because he seems normal and he slowly shows that he's kind of fucked up himself. And I like how much he hated his son's girlfriend because he was like, yeah, and you can't knock her down. He's like, I could knock her down. I know, but she can't even move her. No, I could. No, trust me, I could. Because he needed his son to know he could knock down a 15-year-old girl.
My favorite part is, your girlfriend Annabelle? No, Dad, just Ann, not the bell. Why do you keep adding the bell? Oh, because she's shaped like because she's the bell of the ball.
Okay, guys, they're going to cut us off, so I got to go to another sponsorship thing.
Next week on the Blue Roofie.
Merciful Martini! I've been knocked up by my arch nemesis, Corporal Chloroform! Must reach GHB packet and slip it into his beverage!
Yeah,
okay, good night, everybody!
Competition.
good night, everybody!
Where's the Gary Owens?